Chapter 32. Within a year, the owners of the seven taverns of Beauport were forced to try some more honorable trade for a living. When this was published by the whole press of Quebec, several of the best-thinking people of the surrounding parishes began to say to one another, "Why should we not try to bring into our midst this temperance reformation, which is doing so much good in Beauport?" The wives of drunkards would say, "Why does not our curate do here what the curate of Beauport has done?" One day, one of those unfortunate women, whose husband had spent a rich inheritance in dissipation, came to me. She explained how she had asked her curate to establish a temperance society in his parish, but he had told her to mind her own business. She had then respectfully requested him to invite me to come and help, but had been sternly rebuked at the mention of my name. The poor woman was weeping when she said, "Is it possible that our priests are so indifferent to our sufferings, and that they will let the demon of drunkenness torture us as long as we live, when God gives us such an easy and honorable way to destroy his power forever?" My heart was touched by the tears of that lady, and I said to her, "I know a way to put an end to the opposition of your curate, and force him to bring among you the reformation you so much desire, but I must rely upon your most sacred promise of secrecy before opening my mind to you on that subject." She answered, "I will never reveal your secret. For God's sake, tell me what to do." I replied, "The first time you go to confession, say to your priest that you have a new sin to confess, which is very difficult to reveal to him. He will press you more to confess it. You will then say, 'Father, I confess I have lost confidence in you.' Being asked why, you will tell him, 'Father, you know the bad treatment I have received from my drunken husband, as have hundreds of other wives in your parish. You know the tears we have shed on the ruin of our children, who are destroyed by the bad examples of their drunken fathers. You know the daily crimes and unspeakable abominations caused by drunkenness. You could dry our tears, benefit our husbands, and save our children by establishing the Society of Temperance here as it is in Beauport. But you refuse to do it. How then can I believe you are a good priest with a charity and compassion for us?" Listen with a respectable silence to what he will tell you. Accept his penance, and when he asks you if you regret that sin, answer that you cannot regret it. Tell he has taken the means which God offers him to persuade the drunkards. Get as many other women as you can to go and confess the same thing." A fortnight later, she returned to tell me that more than 50 other respectable women had confessed to the priest that they had lost confidence in him. The poor priest was beside himself, forced every day to hear from his most respectable female parishioners that they were losing confidence in him. He feared lest he lose his fine parish near Quebec, and he sent to the backwoods and be sent to the backwoods of Canada. 3 weeks later, he was knocking at my door. He was very pale and anxious. However, I was happy to see him. He was considered a good priest and had been one of my best friends. I invited him to dine with me and made him feel at home as much as possible, for I knew by his embarrassed manner that he had a very difficult proposition to make. I was not mistaken. At last he said, "Mr. Chiniki, would you be kind enough to preach a retreat of temperance during 3 days to my people as you have done here?" I answered, "Yes, sir, with the greatest pleasure, but it is on condition that you be the first to take the solemn pledge of temperance in the presence of your people." Certainly, he answered, for the pastor must be an example to his people. 3 weeks later, his parish had nobly followed the example of Beauport. Without losing a day, he went to the two other curates and persuaded them to do what he had done. 6 weeks later, all the saloons from Beauport to St. Joachim were closed. Little by little, the country priests were rallying around our glorious banner of temperance. But my bishop, though less severe, was still very cold toward me. At last, the good providence of God forced him, through a great humiliation, to count our society among the greatest spiritual and temporal blessings of the age. At the end of August 1840, we learned that the Count de Forbin Jansen, Bishop de Nancy in France, was just leaving for Montreal. Father Matthew had told me in one of his letters that this bishop had visited him and blessed his work in Ireland, and had also persuaded the Pope to send him his apostolical benediction. I asked and obtained leave of absence for a few days and went to Montreal. I went immediately to pay my homage to him and ask him in the name of God to bravely throw the weight of his great name and position in favor of our temperance societies. He promised he would, adding, the social habit of drinking is so general and strong that it is almost impossible to save the people from becoming drunkards. I have seen Father Matthew in Ireland, and be sure that I shall do all in my power to strengthen your position. But do not tell no one that you have seen me. Some days later in Quebec, a grand dinner was given in his honor. As one of the young curates, I had taken the last seat just opposite the four bishops. When the rich viands and delicate fruits had been well disposed of, bottles of the choicest wines were brought. The Reverend Mr. Demars knocked on the table to command silence, rose and said, please, my lord bishops and gentlemen, let us drink to the health of my lord Count de Forbin Jansen, primate of Lorraine and bishop of Nancy. When the wine was handed to me, I passed it to my neighbor and filled my glass with water, hoping none noticed. I was mistaken. The eyes of my bishop, my lord Seignier, were upon me. With a stern voice he said, Mr. Chiniki, put wine in your glass to drink with us the health of Monsignor de Nancy. Paralyzed with terror, I could not utter a word. To openly resist my bishop in the presence of such an august assembly seemed impossible, but to obey him was also impossible, for I had promised my God and my country never to drink any wine. All eyes were upon me. My heart began to beat so violently that I could not breathe. I wished I had never come to that dinner. A few tears rolled down from my eyes. The Reverend Mr. LaFrance, who was by me, nudged me and said, do you not hear the order of my Lord Seignier? I remained mute, as if nobody had spoken to me. My eyes were cast down. I wished I were dead. The silence told me that everyone was waiting for my answer, but my lips were sealed. After a minute of that silence, the bishop, with a loud and angry voice, repeated, why do you not put wine in your glass and drink to the health of my Lord Forbin Jansen, as the rest of us are doing? My lord, I said, with a subdued and trembling voice, I have put in my glass what I want to drink. I have promised my God and my country that I would never drink any more wine. The bishop, forgetting where he was, said, you are nothing but a fanatic, and you want to reform us. I forgot that I was the subject of that bishop, and remembered that I was a man. In the presence of another man, I raised my head and opened my eyes, and as quick as lightning I rose to my feet, and addressing the Grand Vicar de Mars, I said with calmness, sir, was it that I might be insulted at your table that you have invited me here? Is it not your duty to defend my honor when I am your guest? But as you seem to forget that you owe to your guest what you owe to your guests, I will make my own defense against my unjust aggressor. Then turning towards the Bishop de Nancy, I said, My Lord de Nancy, I appeal to your lordship from the unjust sentence of my own bishop, in the name of God and of his Son Jesus Christ. I request you to tell us here if a priest cannot, for his Savior's sake and for the good of his fellow men, as well as for his own self-denial, give up forever the use of wine and other intoxicating drinks without being abused and slandered and insulted as I am here in your presence. It was evident that my words had made a deep impression on the whole company. A solemn silence followed for a few seconds, which was interrupted by my bishop, who said to the Bishop de Nancy, Yes, yes, my lord, give us your sentence. No words can express the excitement of that multitude of priests accustomed from infancy to abject submission to their bishop, who now found themselves for the first time in the presence of a hand-to-hand conflict between a powerless, humble, unprotected young curate and his all-powerful, proud, and haughty archbishop. The Bishop of Nancy at first refused, but pressed by Bishop Signe and nine-tenths of that vast assembly of priests, raised his eyes and hands to heaven and made a silent but ardent prayer to God. Then he said with unspeakable dignity, My Lord of Quebec, here before us is our young priest, Mr. Chiniki, who once on his knees, in the presence of God and his angels, for the love of Jesus Christ, the good of his own soul, and the good of his country, has promised never to drink. We are the witnesses that he is faithful to his promise. And because he keeps his pledge with such heroism, your lordship has called him a fanatic? Now, I am requested to pronounce my verdict on that painful occurrence. Here it is. If I look through the past ages when God himself was ruling his own people, through his prophets, I see Samson, who by the special order of God never drank wine or any other intoxicating drink. From the Old Testament I pass to the New. I see John the Baptist, the precursor of our Savior, Jesus Christ, who, to obey the command of God, never drank any wine. When I look at Mr. Chiniki and see Samson at his right hand to protect him, and John the Baptist at his left hand to bless him, I find his position so strong and impregnable that I would not dare attack or condemn him. Bishop de Nancy then sat down, emptied his wine glass into a tumbler, filled it with water, and drank to my health. Nobody thought of drinking his wine, and the health of the Bishop de Nancy was left undrunk. But a good number of priests filled their glasses with water, and giving me a silent sign of approbation, drank to my health. It was at that table that Temperance began her triumphant march through Canada.